Blog Talk Radio.
There is a strange story related to the Oscars for Meryl Streep, the lady who just went nuclear against a Trump and got up and told, informed everybody what a piece of garbage she was. The story is that Karl Lagerfeld, the famous designer who runs Chanel, that Meryl Streep had ordered a dress from him or from Chanel, and that he came in and fitted her for it anyway. The dress was worth something along the lines of $100,000. Now, the story goes that she also requested to be paid to wear the dress. Now, this lady's worth $50 million, $60 million, something like that, $70 million. But that was her demand, supposedly. And then when they wouldn't pay her, in addition to giving her a free $100,000 dress, then she went elsewhere. So he mentioned something about it, and she didn't appreciate that.
Allegation first made in Women's Wear Daily is creating shockwaves today in Hollywood and became the lead story on People.com and other publications. Stars are busy getting their last fitting for their Oscar gowns, but the Meryl Streep bombshell now has people wondering, do celebrities really get paid to wear these red carpet showstoppers?
I do think it's a bit of an open secret within the fashion industry that there's a lot of money that changes hands between celebrities and designers.
A spokeswoman for Meryl Streep calls the story absolutely false. The actress's decision not to wear the Lagerfeld design had nothing to do with being paid. Ms. Streep would never be paid to wear anything. It is against her ethics and completely untrue. Some insiders wonder whether Meryl refused to be seen wearing a Lagerfeld gown on Oscar night because the famous designer also dresses First Lady Melania Trump, most recently at the White House. Meryl, of course, is a vocal critic of the president.
When the powerful use their position to bully others, we all lose.
And the president has called the 20-time Oscar nominee overrated.
She is overrated. That is so hilarious. I got to play another clip on this. But, you know, these people, these actors are so self-important. This girl who wins and gets up and says she's in the only industry that celebrates life. Really? The industry that almost uniformly supports abortion, by the way. Here's a little more on Streep.
Meryl Streep on Saturday accused designer Karl Lagerfeld of spoiling her night at the Academy Awards ceremony by falsely accusing her of being paid to wear a gown on the Oscars red carpet. Streep was responding to a claim earlier this week by Lagerfeld that the Sophie's Choice actress had decided against wearing a Chanel gown at Sunday's Oscar ceremony because she could get paid by wearing a dress from a different designer. Streep released a statement saying, "The story was picked up globally and continues globally to overwhelm my appearance at the Oscars on the occasion of my record-breaking 20th nomination and to eclipse this honor in the eyes of the media, my colleagues, and the audience." She dismissed an apology earlier on Saturday from Lagerfeld, who admitted he had misunderstood that Ms. Streep may have chosen another designer due to remuneration, and said he regretted the controversy.
That's remuneration, but anyway. So, poor little Meryl Streep. We'll take a little break here, come back, and shift gears. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. You're listening to KOBE.
About your love, it's a honky tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade.
I was still reading to try to figure out what had happened in the screw up on the best film. And they said that there were two cards left. And that Barry Jenkins wanted to see it. Barry Jenkins, I guess. Maybe he was running the whole thing. I've heard his name, but I don't know exactly who he is. But anyway, they Warren Beatty refused to show anybody the card. So when Warren Beatty opened up the envelope, there it was, that I guess the actress from La La Land's name was in there, and he saw La La Land, and he announced that, and then La La Land came up to get their Oscar, and was the cast surrounded the Warren Beatty, and that's when they figured out it was the wrong film. But I think that's pretty funny. In a ceremony that was largely devoted to trying to trash President Trump that they screwed it up so bad, and they say the spotlight is now on PricewaterhouseCoopers, which has overseen the Academy's ballot counting for 83 years for the process. That's hilarious. Anyway, Warren Beatty was there to celebrate his famous movie, Bonnie and Clyde, with Faye Dunaway. Here's a little bit more on the mistake.
Did anybody notice anything weird go down at the very end of the Oscars?
La La Land.
Seems about right. Many people predicted that the musical would take home the award. Nothing odd there. Except it didn't actually win. Whoops. Cut to producers running on stage during La La Land's acceptance speech that shouldn't have been. And then...
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Seriously, that happened. And the Oscar should have gone to Moonlight. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway presented Best Picture together, and things got a little messy when they announced the wrong winner.
I wasn't trying to be funny.
Beatty explained they had read the wrong envelope, which showed Emma Stone winning Best Actress for La La Land. Dunaway quickly read off La La Land before Beatty could stop her. The gallant Jimmy Kimmel, however, jumped in to take the blame himself.
I knew I would screw this show up. I really did.
He also blamed Steve Harvey. The whole thing felt totally surreal, even to Team Moonlight, as they took the stage in a highly unusual situation.
Still not sure this is real, but thank you to the Academy.
The audience could barely believe it, and social media quickly blew up, with everyone from Billy Crystal to Seth MacFarlane to Oprah to Katy Perry tweeting their reactions. Let me know all your thoughts in the comments on this once-in-a-lifetime Oscar moment. For the Hollywood Reporter's
Once-in-a-lifetime screw-up. Okay, let me get you some of the headlines that you so desperately crave at this time of the morning. Here's from The Drudge. Tinseltown in the rain. Wrong Best Picture announced. Biggest Oscar disaster in history. Take two. Moonlight wins. In memoriam segment showed still living producer. Nonstop Trump bashing on the boulevard. Stage prop comes crashing down. For all the immigrants, the first winner for a Muslim, the actor and actor states don't build walls. Rousing ovation for Iranian filmmaker who had attacked Tehran, of course, is in full praise. March, biggest month for Republicans in decades. The fundraising for the GOP is going through the roof. So for those people who think that this is the end of the GOP, that that Trump has been a total disaster, that's not how people in the party feel. Iran holding naval war games. And Ahmadinejad writes an open letter to the United States or to the world. Revolutionary Guard commander admits terror cells ready to strike in America. Revolutionary Guards are from Iran, right? No plan to fix missile defense system. Mexico Catholic Church says government submits to Trump terrorism. Could this Pope become any more of a Marxist? I'm just curious. He is so. I mean, he ought to be voted out of office. So the several leaders across the Europe are rising of far right leaders. Geert Wilder coming up before the Dutch vote, Trump style, or populist gains in polls. The same thing happened to Le Pen in France. So you could get across the entire world a Trump style Brexit movement. They're planning on scanning your retina before you get on planes. Super smart robots will outnumber humans within 30 years, says SoftBank CEO. Father of dead Navy SEAL refusing to meet with the president, calls for an investigation, says for the president not to hide his son's death behind their military attack. And more of these town halls are turning into total fiascos because of the far left, the president's foot soldiers being directed to go and protest. The occult taking on the president, witchcraft rituals across the globe against Trump. Trump canceling back channel talks with North Korea after their provocations. And the leader of Iran killed his own brother. If you haven't heard it, by paying two girls to wipe his face with a substance that, when both of the things came together, created the world's most toxic substance called VX. O.J. Simpson could be released in months, and he'll start collecting his NFL retirement. Supreme Court weighing law banning sex offenders from Facebook. And all right, so let's take another little break here and come back. And let's hear a little bit about the Democratic Party in free fall. By the way, the Sun News has been greatly reduced to a couple of pages. I was surprised by that. It's two or three pages of the Sun News, and then everything else is America's paper, USA Today. Very interesting. I'm sure you guys already know about that. Be right back. 644 Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450.
It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Apparently there's a gap. Why? Now researchers think it's because people who are on either extreme ends of the attractiveness scale tend to stand out, whether it's good looking or bad looking, and because they're
blue. All right, so anyway. A little bit of interesting distraction, but it's funny that there was so much mayhem at the Oscars that it kind of drowned out the protest against Trump. I find that entertaining, to say the least. Here is a kind of, speaking of entertaining, Robert Reich, who was very far to the left, I would say at least a socialist member of President Clinton's White House, and has been, I think, teaching school. I think the guy's like 5'3", is stating in the midst of all of the attacks against Trump, you've got an unprecedented, according to him, an unprecedented failure in the Democrat Party, which I think is probably true. And here is from, looking for what, ABC.
There is a lot of energy out there in what they are calling the resistance. The key question is, can it be turned into an enduring and effective movement?
That is the key question. And right now there is a disconnect, George, between a rather sclerotic Democratic apparatus, which is in complete disarray. I mean, the Democratic Party has not been in this bad shape since perhaps the 1920s, and a huge uprising at the grassroots, mostly against Trump. Now, how can Tom Perez, can he actually utilize that, turn the Democratic Party from a vast fundraising machine into a movement? Hasn't been done before very easily. I mean, you remember in the Vietnam War days, we had a huge uprising, but obviously the Democratic Party had nothing to do with that. The thing that worries me most of all is that at the problems inside the Democratic Party, they have a lot to do with the same sort of populist uprising we're seeing across the country, including the Donald Trump campaign. That is, people for 35 years have not had a raise. The average American is actually economically in a lot of economic desperation, insecure. We have parts of this country that are really desolate in terms of the economic activity. And so you've got a lot of anger out there that nobody, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans, have come up for the way
and I guess
responded
the question, Stephanie, is can that anger be channeled?
All right. And then I've got another clip from Private Sanders, Bernie Sanders. The way the Democratic Party has been run for decades has not worked. This guy finally decides to stand up and tell the truth, huh? After
President Trump's tweet suggesting that the system was rigged against Keith Ellison in the same way that the DNC system was rigged against you in the primaries, does he have a point?
No, he doesn't have a point. That's what the system is. And one of the things that Tom is going to have to change is to figure out how we elect national Democratic leaders. I'm not quite impressed with the process that now exists. But the bottom line here right now is that yesterday, among other things, there were 150 rallies all across this country, most of them in front of Republican congressional offices, where citizens of this country are telling their members of Congress, have the guts to come out and meet with us, explain to us why you're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, throw 20 million people off of health insurance, do away with pre-existing conditions. Don't hide. Don't simply run to your wealthy campaign contributors. Talk to your constituents. And you are seeing that movement, millions of people engaged. We are going to transform this country.
Whatever. You know, it's like Sanders is an interesting guy to listen to, but he always comes up with the wrong answer. Now, here's a little clip on the issue of who the DNC was going to choose for its leadership, and it was down to Tom Perez and Keith Ellison. And the problem with Keith Ellison is he is not just Muslim, but, you know, I mean, he's a Nation of Islam. And so, I mean, in other words, a group of people who are actively opposed to the Jews around the world, and the Jews are mostly a Democrat party. How are you going to have this guy? Anyway, I don't understand it, but they chose Perez. Here's a little bit on this.
Mr. Perez, congratulations.
And the motion I would like to make to the body is a motion suspending the rules, if I may, to appoint Keith Ellison, deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee.
That's former Labor Secretary Tom Perez edging out top rival Congressman Keith Ellison as the new DNC chair. But Ellison is still getting a seat at the table, as you heard.
Yeah, and our next guest, a lifelong Democrat, said he would leave the party if Ellison was in charge. So what does he think about this development?
Joining us now is Harvard University Law Professor Alan Dershowitz. Professor, thanks for joining us this morning. So you
Thank
saw
you.
These results. Was this the election of Tom Perez, is this a real directional change, more moderates or the establishment's in charge, or is this just a last gasp of the Clinton-Obama regime, but the party really does want to move further left?
And are you staying in the party?
Well, I think I'm staying in the party because Ellison was defeated, and the Ellison defeat is a victory in the war against bigotry, anti-Semitism, the anti-Israel push of the hard left within the Democratic Party. Look, I wish that Perez hadn't appointed Ellison to any position in the Democratic Party, but I'm going to stay in the Democratic Party and work to try to move it toward the center, to try to move it away from the hard left, to try to move it away from its twist toward opposition to Israel and toward American values. It's going to be an uphill fight, but I'm there to fight that battle. We won this battle. We won the battle when at the convention they tried to put an anti-Israel element in the platform. We won that narrowly. So I think we can still fight and win for centrist values. Look, the Democrats are marginalizing themselves. They have to understand we are not a hard left country. When the Democrats nominated McGovern, when they nominated Dukakis, when they nominated Walter Mondale, the three of them together didn't get enough electoral votes to win one election. You'd think they'd learn the lesson that they have to move to the center. We are a centrist country. And I worry that the Republicans are moving too far right in some ways. The Democrats are moving too far left. It's happening in Europe. We have to return to the vital center and have debates between centrist liberals and centrist conservatives. That's where our country is.
You know, I'll never forget throughout the campaign, we got close to the election. I spent some time in Scranton, Pennsylvania, many Democrats in that area. And a lot of them told me for the first time in their life, they were switching their vote to go Republican because they said, we are not inspired. And this is a place where Joe Biden's father was born. I think Hillary Clinton's father was buried there as well. And it made me realize the Democrats, they are struggling to find that message that does inspire people that live in places like Scranton, Pennsylvania. What is your
and
answer
that's where
to that?
That's where they have to win. They have to win in the center of the country. They do not have to try to attract the Jill Stein.
Too late. Democratic Party's already ruined. I mean, I hate to say it, but here is your favorite politician. Hold on a second. Somebody who's entering her 80s with a lot of pep in her step, Nancy Pelosi. And she only occasionally forgets things like who's the current president.
My pleasure.
So you heard Sarah Sanders right there talk about this idea of a special committee looking into the Russia ties with the Trump campaign. Also, pretty much saying that there will not be any recusal, at least for now, from the attorney general. Your response?
Well, it's, as you read the law and saw the law, the attorney general must recuse himself. But let's just take it back a step. You have seen a flurry of activities that are completely inappropriate, encouraging lawmakers, encouraging intelligence officials to say that something is one way or another. Let's have the investigation and find out the truth. And we've been calling, we have 100 now plus one Republican on Eric Swalwell's bill for an outside independent commission to study the personal, political, and a financial relationship between President Trump and the Russians.
So far, these efforts have been quashed by the Republican leadership in the House, and you're getting some pressure from Democrats.
That's right. That's right. Here she is in all her glory.
I pledge allegiance to the flag, and I pledge allegiance to the flag of the
All right, so a little Porky Pig there for you. Anyway, thanks for tuning into the first hour. I've got a couple of big stories. Well, I don't know how big they are, but there's a really interesting thing going on out there. A transgender person won the female wrestling state title in Texas, believe it or not. And I got a couple of stories related to that, but a little bit on the attempt to impeach Trump next, and then a little bit, I'm going to throw you a little bit on Marxist strategy, just kind of remind you what the Marxists try to do. 658, 659, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be back after a break on the hour.
There's only a big Yeah, only a canvas sky. Hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love,
it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love,
it's a melody played in a penny arcade.
So, and so that was the Oscars for you. And the fact of the matter is that what happened, according to what I've read, is that Warren Beatty went back and picked up the envelope for this round Best Picture. And then he brought it up front. And when he opened it, he looked down at it, and it was the Best Actress envelope. He looked there at the envelope and he looked over to Faye Dunaway. Faye Dunaway grabbed it from him and saw the movie in there and announced the movie, and that's what happened. Now, how he ended up with the wrong envelope is a good question, and especially if it was the last part of the show, you know. But all right, so here is a little bit of the controversy that is currently going on, Donald Trump and the father of a Navy SEAL who was killed in Yemen, the Yemen raid. And this is, let's see here, this is from a little bit from Fox News.
Whether that attack on suspected al-Qaeda compound was properly planned. William Ryan Owens' dad refusing to meet with President Trump at the casket ceremony in Dover, Delaware.
All right, so that's barely kind of follow that, but here is a little bit from CBS.
Of the Navy SEAL killed in a counterterrorism raid in Yemen is demanding an investigation into the operation. Senior Chief Petty Officer William Ryan Owens was the first U.S. serviceman to be killed in a Trump administration combat mission. His father, Bill Owens, told the Miami Herald he turned down a meeting with the president when the Navy SEAL's body was brought home. Jan Crawford explains why. The father says his son died in a, quote, stupid mission. Jan, good morning.
Good morning. Senior Chief Petty Officer Ryan Owens was killed a month ago, along with 14 al-Qaeda operatives and at least 15 civilians. And now his father, a retired police officer and military veteran, is speaking out, a grieving parent trying to make sense of his son's death.
His family was there. Incredible family, loved him so much, so devastated.
Earlier this month, President Trump described meeting Navy SEAL Ryan Owens' family when his body was returned to the U.S. But Owens' father, Bill, was not one of the family members that met the president at Dover Air Force Base. In an interview with the Miami Herald, he said, quote, I told him I didn't want to make a scene about it, but my conscience wouldn't let me talk to him. His refusal to meet President Trump stems from questions about the timing and execution of the raid that killed his son. Under the cover of night on January 28th, SEAL Team 6 became pinned down outside an al-Qaeda compound. They were forced to call in an airstrike, killing both militants and civilians inside. Chief Petty Officer Owens was killed, and a $72 million evac aircraft crash-landed and had to be destroyed.
This was a very, very well thought out and executed effort.
The White House described the mission as a success, later issuing a warning to critics.
I think anybody who undermines the success of that raid owes an apology and a disservice to the life of Chief Owens.
But Owens' father wants a closer look. Don't hide behind my son's death to prevent an investigation, he told the Herald. I want an investigation. The government owes my son an investigation.
Now, Owens acknowledged to the Herald that he didn't vote for Trump. A White House spokesperson said yesterday that she imagines the president is open to an investigation. The Department of Defense routinely conducts reviews of missions that result in loss of life.
Well, I mean, I can't blame the guy for if, you know, anybody in his situation would want to know if something went wrong, obviously. But that doesn't mean that the president is culpable for anything. But, you know, the media does play these things up. All right, here's a little to lighten the mood a little bit. Jim Gaffigan, lazy.
I am a lazy man. I love doing nothing, which is not good when you're busy. You ever have so much to do so you just decide to take a nap? Maybe some elves will come in here and do this crap. I think I saw that once in a movie. I struggle with my laziness. I'm like, should I sit down and do nothing, or should I lie down and do nothing? You'd think lazy people like me would have been weeded out by natural selection. I can't imagine someone like me in pioneer time. I really got to harvest those crops, or my 8 kids aren't going to make it through winter. I'll have other kids. I got to get back to staring at the barn. Maybe I'll read the Bible for the 10th time. It's fun doing nothing. But if you do nothing for too long, the most menial task is exhausting. You're like, I actually have to point the remote control? What is this, the 50s? Can't I just look at the TV and it'll know what I want to watch? You ever been watching TV for a couple hours and you suddenly lose the remote? I haven't even gotten up. I don't remember throwing it. Well, looks like I'm watching this infomercial. We all have the same attitude on infomercials. Who's watching this crap? And then 3 minutes later, that's a good point.
Maybe I need a knife that can cut a penny. Too bad my phone's on the other side of the room. I need a remote for my phone.
I think you know you're addicted to TV when the battery in the remote goes out and you replace it with the battery from the smoke alarm. Hey, I only smoke in bed anyway. You'll wake me up, remote, won't you? Remember when the remote was 3 buttons? Now it's like an honors math calculator. Just trying to find VH1, not split an atom. I watch too much. I don't understand the people who don't like TV.
I just prefer reading.
Have you watched television? It's way better. There's pictures, there's sound, and most importantly, no reading. I don't even know what people did before television. That must have been horrible. Even in those old-time photos of people gathered around the radio, they're always looking at the radio like, I can't wait till they invent the TV. This era sucks. Why were they even looking at the radio? Were they that bored? Maybe it'll turn into a TV.
All right. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And a little blast from the past here for you. 7:14, 27th of February. We'll be right back on KOBE.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
All right, so there is a lot of talk out there in an effort to lead to the impeachment of the president, which is kind of bizarre, bearing in mind he's just been in there for a month. And as Nancy Pelosi claims, he hasn't really done anything to be impeached. Well, she didn't actually say that. What she said is he hasn't done anything. So if he hasn't done anything, how are you going to impeach him? But the idea is to find Trump in some giant mistake and then impeach him as soon as possible. And that really crazy thing is that there's a lot of people in the Democratic Party who have bought into this as a strategy. So, I mean, I don't know. What exactly is, you know, these people are thinking, but I think it's, I don't know, it's sad that, you know, they supposedly the worst thing that Rush Limbaugh ever did was to say that he hoped that I'm trying to multitask here. I do apologize. Wow. That Limbaugh had said that he hoped that the president would fail in his attempts to go far to the left, which if he had failed more and if Obama had been impeached, I think we'd be talking about a better country here. But in any event, here is Congress receiving Impeach Trump Now petition. And this is from 5 days ago, 6 days ago.
How are you? Good to see you. We have some petitions here for you. This is Professor Catherine Ross of George Washington University.
Catherine, hello.
And today we delivered more than 850,000 signatures from Americans all across the country demanding that the United States Congress initiate an impeachment investigation now of President Donald Trump based on his ongoing violations of the United States Constitution, both the Foreign Emoluments Clause and the Domestic Emoluments Clause, which the president is violating based on his refusal to fully divest from his business interests in this campaign. So today, Congressman, we're delivering to you and the United States Congress our petition at impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org of 850,000 plus. This is just the start of the campaign that we intend to continue to build all across the country. There will be millions more that come forward to demand that the United States Congress do its job. The way to hold a president accountable for violating the United States Constitution is to engage in an impeachment proceeding. And this president is defying the rule of law. He's defying the United States Constitution, and he ought to face an impeachment investigation now.
Well,
the whole Russian thing, that's a ruse. It's a ruse. And by the way,
there is an ongoing petition campaign at impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org. And we.
All right. So here's the thing. Is the Constitution the main thing, or is it the person in office is the main thing? What's more important, the Constitution or the person in the party? Because if the problem is that the person in office is breaking the Constitution, if they're going against the rule of law, why didn't these same people try to impeach Obama? See, you see, this is a tactic from the left in which they will only allow criticisms to be of the opposite party. So it's pure politics. It has nothing to do with principle. And that's why I think people across the country, in the middle of the country, people who are moderates, people who are centrists, and people who are or more conservative, see this as a complete hoax. And it's not going to get traction. Here's another clip from this is from Fox. They're trying to impeach Obama in secret, or Obama is trying to impeach Donald Trump in secret, from Fox News.
Erupted over President Trump's refugee executive order. Former President Barack Obama said, quote, he's heartened by the demonstrations. Was that it? Well, our next guest says that was a message to his troops, an army of agitators with one goal, sabotage Trump's presidency. New York Post columnist and author of The Great American Bank Robbery, Paul Sperry, joins us. Paul, you point to Organizing for America. What is Organizing America doing with these protesters, and what's the president linked to that organization?
Yeah, all these protests against Trump, they're not spontaneous. They're pre-manufactured by OFA, and OFA is Obama. OFA is the Organizing for Action. It's a nonprofit that's officially tied to Obama.
But the guy's windsurfing. What is it? Is he really organizing?
Oh yeah, he's behind all these protests that are breaking out across the country. They want you to believe that this is some broad-based sudden uprising against Trump's policies, but it's not. It's just Obama and his radical activists.
How many are involved? How many are involved in OFA?
Well, according to their tax records I looked up, they've got an army of over 32,000 hardcore Alinsky-trained agitators, and they're training thousands more as we speak. They've got a big training summit coming up in March. And so basically Obama is—
I played this clip the other day, but I want to just remind everybody what's going on. All of these protests that you see breaking out at universities and all of these people flooding into these town halls, none of this is happening spontaneously.
Is building a shadow government to sabotage Trump at every turn, and he's got an army to do it.
Like when something, you know, something was up when Jason Chaffetz wins his district with 73% of the vote, yet at a town hall, 70% of the people at that town hall were screaming at him over Obamacare.
He's in a safe Republican district. Yeah, that wasn't spontaneous, of course. That's all from the right out of the training manual that OFA has put out. I've got a copy of it. And they actually have a whole section in here on how to target these town halls and ambush Republicans who go back and hold these town hall meetings. It says, get seated and spread out. Head into the venue a bit early to grab seats at the front of the room, but do not all sit together. Sit by yourself or in groups of two and spread out throughout the room. This will help reinforce the impression of broad consensus.
And if you talk to the administration offline and even sometimes on camera, they are stunned by the amount of uprising, the fact that these protests haven't stopped. You're not, because you know where it starts. You know where the foundation is.
All right. So that's really going over what's happening. And the thing is that I don't even hear the Republicans talking about this. Instead of talking about what is happening at these town hall meetings and linking it to Obama and his group, they're like, well, yeah, they're showing up. They're angry. There's a lot of passion out there. I mean, it's like the GOP is not even organized on this, and it is a threat to the democracy. And my question is, if Obama is fomenting rebellion and to try to overturn the order, shouldn't he be prosecuted for that? I'm just asking. Now, here's for Ben Stein, media doing to Trump what it did to Nixon.
I'm not surprised at it. I'm not disappointed at it. And I don't blame Mr. Trump one bit for doing it. I mean, he's a punching bag day after day after day in the media, especially what's called the mainstream media. And I don't blame him for not wanting to go and be a punching bag in person. Every day they're looking for a scandal. They're just turning the woods upside down looking for a scandal. They're hoping, I think, to do to him what they did to Nixon a long time ago, and I still haven't found any real scandals.
A lot of people look at what happened to Richard Nixon and they say, I mean, what Richard Nixon did to himself. The tapes from the Oval Office showed that 6 days after the Watergate break-in, he was discussing himself. He was discussing a cover-up, you know, the smoking gun tape. How did the media do that to Richard Nixon?
The media picked one tiny little thing that he did, one tiny, tiny little
what
thing he did.
What tiny little thing?
One tiny little thing he did, which is just to discuss a cover-up. He didn't do the cover-up. They didn't follow through with the cover-up payments that he discussed. They just discussed it. This was a guy who brought more peace to the world than any president in the 20th century.
So they you think the Watergate scandal and what was uncovered was phooey?
It was not a good thing. Shouldn't have done it, obviously. But compared with his achievements, nothing. And I think they're doing the exact same thing to Mr. Trump, whose achievements, by the way, compared with Nixon, are nil. But I think they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to undo him basically before he even gets started.
All right. So there you have it. And it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious that what they're trying to do, I mean, every single day is a scandal. Every single day is the worst thing that's ever happened. And from what I understand anyway, by the way, he's bringing back the travel ban. Now, here is for those people who claim that what the left is doing is the same thing as the Tea Party. Here are seven reasons put forward by a guy that helped launch the Tea Party, Mark Meckler. Seven ways that this movement of socialists, grassroots socialists, which are really party hacks and paid disruptors, Alinsky disruptors. Here's the difference. Number one, Tea Party challenges the Republican Party to become better. The resistance, on the other hand, the leftist resistance is all about partisanship. Two, the Tea Party movement is grassroots. The resistance is AstroTurf. These are all paid protesters. Three, the Tea Party is not violent. Four, the Tea Party isn't comprised of millennial crybabies upset at a single politician. Five, the Tea Party utilizes free speech. The anti-Trump resistance squelches. It tries to get rid of free speech. Well, you see when this guy Milo goes to Berkeley, they go and have a riot. Six, the Tea Party was attacked by the government even though they broke no laws. The resistance is never even properly investigated by the media, even though they do violent protests, they attack people, they break windows, they burn things down. Seven, the Tea Party is about love and respect. The resistance is about hatred and contempt. There you go. Hopefully Kathy's listening. Kathy, you cry babies. 7:30 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Frankie has been in his hole. He's down in his bunker. He must be planning for the end of the world. 523 1450 on AM Las Cruces. KOBE. We'll be right back.
And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. All that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.
All right, so I've got, let's see here. Let me get into this trans issue in a couple of different stories. I think you'll find it notable, the connection here. Remember the lady who was white and claimed to be black and was head of the NAACP, Rachel Dolezal? When she is a girl, she had naturally blonde hair. As she got older, her hair was blonde and naturally straight, and she had freckles, blue eyes. Now she claims to be black. So check this out. Anyway, she's lost her job and may be soon homeless.
Sorry, last thing.
Are you African American?
She's getting interviewed here. This is when it came out that she was not black when she was the head of the NAACP in Washington State.
NAACP leader Rachel Dolezal lied about her race.
Are you African American?
I don't understand the question. I did tell you that, yes, that's my dad. And he was unable to come in January.
Are your parents, are they white?
And that was it for there. Well, now, after being caught in that lie, she is still sticking to her story.
Do you feel now that you have any regrets about some of the things you said about yourself that have now been revealed to not be true?
I'm not sure what you're referring to with that, but definitely I don't have any regrets about how I identify. I'm still me. And nothing about that has changed.
Well, what's the psychology behind this particular kind of race fraud. Here to weigh in is psychiatrist Dr. Keith Abloh of the Fox News Medical Aid team. Why would she start in the first place identifying as a black woman?
Well, some people would say she lied for secondary gain. Other people would say...
What do you mean secondary gain?
Well, in order to be given a job, in order to be included in a particular advocacy group or to garner endorsement of people who employ her. But the bottom line is, the other possibility is that she, in my mind, you'd say, well, is she psychiatrically ill? Because if she really believes that she's a black woman, well, then she's delusional. Just like if you believed that you were, say, from another planet.
Keith, she says there's no proof that my biological parents are my biological parents.
Well, so here's the New World Order. According to this woman, she is African American. You can't believe that she was born of her parents. This is called disassembling reality. Mm-hmm. Now, in psychiatry, you call that a delusion. In some sectors of our culture, you call that choice. Now, the bottom line is...
You cannot choose your race.
Well,
can you?
Of course you can't. I'm here as a psychiatrist and as a human being to tell you, of course you can't. But there are people, and they're Democrats, and they're liberals, and they're people who would say, yes, you can. And I've been told by lawyers I consulted, hey, if I think I'm 65, and I say my entire self-concept is that of a 65-year-old, can I get Medicare? And the lawyers have told me, well, you know what? You'd have a case because of women like this. Right. And because of other case law relating to transgenderism, you say that you're female, you have to be treated in some states as a female. If I say I'm 65, why am I not 65? Why are you committing ageism against me?
So you're saying we are now in a new world order where you can invent at will your own personal history and your own reality.
Who was the first human being in the world to say that transgenderism would pave the way for people to declare their races? Dr. Keith Abloh. I warned about it.
Can you hear me?
And it's happening, and it will happen with age, and because of guys like Mark Zuckerberg, who have
you
invent your life
on
Facebook,
okay?
And then don't understand the concept of the borders of a country. The countries are real, Mark.
He's part of the denial of reality.
But there are no countries on the internet, he says, right?
Exactly, because you know what? What's he doing? He's saying invent yourself, throw up happy pictures, just tell your story. Mind not that it's not your real story, and don't worry about these jihadists. They're not really out to kill you because you're American, because you know what? You're not American. You're just one of the pixels on Facebook. You know what? He's a dangerous guy. This woman is a dangerous woman, because the bottom line is we want our kids to grow up sane.
All right, Dr.
All right, so we've got a phone call from Paul. Thanks for calling in, Paul. What's going on?
Well, what a paradox. What a travesty we have here. So as I see, we have the left is skewering this woman, and possibly rightfully so, for self-identifying as an African-American woman. But I think they hurt their entire argument when they're so inconsistent with other segments of society that are self-identifying and then defending them. But it's as if she stepped over some invisible line when she self-identified a race that probably isn't her own.
Well, Paul,
she is self-identified.
Yeah, Paul, are you aware that the Texas state has a female wrestling and the winner for one of the weight classes is transgender?
Absolutely. I saw that on TV last night.
What's the difference here? I mean, if these people, I understand that the black people are outraged and want this lady thrown out. But what you're saying is, I think my feeling too, how can you have it both ways?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But when it's a racial issue, and not a gender, then there's a dichotomy there, and that inconsistency hurts the liberal argument every time.
Paul, let me ask you a question. Do you think that America, the people in the middle, the people in the right, you know, libertarians, whatever, conservatives, you think we're ready to throw off political correctness to really go after it, or is it too soon?
I think not only are we ready, I think that we've started to.
With Trump.
I think we've started with Trump. Actually, well, Trump's just, he's the manifest of the movement, I guess, of the anti-political correctness. He's, you know, he's kind of the poster boy for it, but I don't believe that he started it. I think you have a large segment of the voting American populace that's just tired of it. They're tired of the political correctness. They're tired of being spoon-fed news that may or may not be accurate, that has a political bent. I think this is all rolled up in the same ball, so to speak. It's all part and parcel of the same thing. And I think that the beginning of throwing that off has already started.
I agree. Anything else?
No, sir.
Good call, Paul.
You have a good day.
You too. All right, folks. I got another clip here. I got to ask you this. I mean, everybody has a certain amount of probably sympathy for the transgenders because these are people that are lost, right? I mean, they're in the wrong body. They're lost out of the right body, according to them, and especially kids who are growing up in this crazy culture. But there is an effect. There is everything has a cost, right? So, for example, I'll just use an easy example. There was a day when kids that were born out of wedlock were called bastards, which was totally unfair to those kids, not their fault, right? But what it did was the mother was a loose woman or whatever. She might have been, unfortunately, a victim of rape, but the general rule was to cover the general problem that society didn't want to have kids out of wedlock because of the damage that it would do to society. Now we've gotten rid of that, and fatherlessness has gone through the roof. Are we better off with bastards or without? And we got another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Boy, Kelly, you got a jam-packed show for a Monday, and it's funny that all the agitators don't seem to call you anymore.
They're hunkered down, Greg. They're living up beneath ground. They're shaking in their boots.
Yeah, you know, well, it's been Michael Savage that said that liberalism is a mental disorder. So I think maybe you think there's a chance they're coming around.
I think somebody like that. I'll just use a couple of examples. Kathy was always a little bit wavery in terms of supporting the crazy stuff. She had very strong feelings on some stuff and she didn't on others. Frankie's a card carrying member of the left. I don't know. I think some people have got to get peeled off when they see the crazy protest. My buddy in Florida, Pete, who is 100% behind Obama, is saying that he likes what Trump's up to.
Wow. That is really good news. Hey, listen, real quickly, I know your show's winding up here. I just want to give a shout out to the Mesilla Valley Christian Sunblazers boys basketball team. They took first place in district Saturday night against Lordsburg. They will have a home game against Alamo Navajo Saturday at 6. So congratulations to the Sunblazers. Keep doing a great job, Kelly.
Nice. Thanks, Greg. All right, folks, here is this little clip. I just want to ask you, let's say your daughter got the crazy idea she wanted to be a wrestler, and she got involved, and she was doing very well, and maybe she's a tomboy or whatever, but it makes, you know, a much better fit than for her to be on the guys team. She's wrestling. She's in the state championship. She's, you know, and the person that she's wrestling against is a female on male hormones. How would you feel about that?
It's the dramatic end to a competitive and controversial weekend for Mac Beggs. The 17-year-old Dallas area high school student won the title of champion in the girls' state wrestling competition Saturday. A mix of cheers and boos directed at the wrestler as he fell to his knees, appearing to soak in the win. Many in the audience feel Beggs has an unfair advantage on the road to victory. Beggs is a transgender athlete, born a girl, transitioning to become a boy. He takes testosterone injections to make that transition happen. Many believe that provides the young wrestler with an added competitive edge. His strength and agility are hard to miss on the mat.
So there's a big issue right now, right? And I think if he has been taking hormones or steroids, he should be wrestling boys.
That can't happen, though, according to the University Interscholastic League, which oversees public high school athletics. Current UIL rules state may not wrestle against girls and vice versa, and gender shall be determined based on a student's birth certificate. For Beggs, that means he's got no choice. but to wrestle girls. Then there's the issue of the hormone therapy that would typically be disqualifying. Not in this case, SUIL Deputy Director Dr. Jamie Harrison.
The law is very, very specific that a student who is being administered performance-enhancing drugs by a physician cannot be made ineligible.
The UIL insists it's willing to review its existing laws to see if they need to be changed by legislators. For now, states stand by this weekend's competition, calling it fair. Today, Begg shares the gold with his peers.
I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for my teammates. That's honestly what the spotlight should have been on, is my teammates.
The young athlete wrestles with a new uncertainty. Next season, will he still face off with girls as a boy?
I mean, hello. This is makes another thing that makes no sense. We'll take a break here. Got your weather for you. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. Well, I don't have time to get to the clip that I had. Soros, Marxist, Leninist tactics for communist revolution. Kind of an interesting clip. But what I do have for you is something that was written by a guy by the name of Marshall Kirk. He was a New England Historic Genealogical Society librarian. Sounds pretty harmless, huh? He was also a noted writer and researcher in neuropsychiatry. However, he's best known as one of the co-authors of After the Ball, How America Will Conquer Its Fear and Hatred of Gays in the 90s, The Strategy for the LGBT Movement in the 1990s. And Kirk is dead, but his strategy lives on. And he wrote something that was apparently passed out to a lot of people, The Overhauling of Straight America, number one. Oh, well, here's the opening paragraphs. The first order of business is desensitization of the American public concerning gays and gay rights. To desensitize the public is to help it view homosexuality with indifference instead of with keen emotion. Ideally, we would have straights register differences in sexual preference the way they register different tastes for ice cream or sports games, like strawberry. She likes strawberry and I like vanilla. He follows baseball and I follow football. No big deal. So, which is the way things are today, right? I mean, if the issue of homosexuality comes up, especially millennials will jump up and defend it. And, you know, people are born that way, number one. Number two, it's just a matter of taste. Number three, you shouldn't judge other people, that type of thing. Came out of a strategy. Now, the first part of the strategy, talk about gays and gayness as loudly and as often as possible. The principle behind this advice is simple. Almost any behavior begins to look normal if you are exposed to enough of it at close quarters and among your acquaintances. Two, portray gays as victims, not as aggressive challengers. In any campaign to win over the public, gays must be cast as victims in need of protection so that straights will be inclined by reflex to assume the role of protector. Three, give protectors a just cause. Campaign that casts gays as society's victims and encourages straights to be their protectors makes it easier for those to respond to assert and explain their new protectiveness. Four, make gays look good. In order to make a gay victim sympathetic to straights, you have to portray him as every man. Five, make the victimizers look bad. At a later stage of the media campaign for gay rights, long after other gay ads have become commonplace, it will be time to get tough with remaining opponents. To be blunt, they must be vilified. Call them homophobes, etc. Six, solicit funds. A massive campaign needs a lot of money. Other points, getting on the air, or you can't get this out there unless you can get it into the media. Now, here is something from the Discover the Networks organization, which is pretty good. And some of the tactics of the left that it mentions. Cloward Piven, the attempt by the left to bankrupt the society by using every ounce of social welfare that is available for every person who could qualify. Two, a legendary figure in the playbook and the tactics of him, Saul Alinsky. Three, the vision of the anointed. It has an explanation. I'll get back to that. Number four, now this is very interesting. Two leading Marxist intellectuals, Antonio Gramsci in Italy and George Lukács in Hungary, both concluded independent of one another that Western culture and the Christian religion had so blinded the working class to its true Marxist interests that a communist revolution would be impossible in the West without first destroying both institutions. So Gramsci laid out a strategy for destroying Christianity and Western culture by conducting in an orderly fashion a long march through the various institutions, where the Marxists would infiltrate schools, media, churches, labor unions, major political parties, every institution that influences culture. This process would sabotage American society from the inside and would require decades to fully unfold. And Lukács called this cultural terrorism to destroy his own country's traditional sexual morals. And so, therefore, the downfall of traditional culture and Christian faith. And they say in a recent study that it is the sex revolution that has most damaged Christian faith in this country. All right. Now, here's another angle, was the political correctness movement, which came out of the Frankfurt School, which is attached to one of the other guy here. Now, I know I'm going a little faster, but running out of time. The vision of the anointed, Thomas Sowell, says this is how you do a Marxist revolution, or this is how the left has taken topics and kind of mastered them. Number one, you come up with a crisis. Recently, the healthcare crisis. Number two, you come up with a solution. You have advocates and policies to deal with the crisis. Number three, the results. The policies are instituted, which lead to detrimental results. And four, the response to the detrimental results. You keep going. And take over medicine one day, you take over something else the next day. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, and take you out with a little Casablanca. By the way, the black guy in the film playing Sam doesn't know how to play piano. Believe it or not, he was just an actor. We'll be back in 22 hours. Have a great day. Ciao.
Moonlight and love songs are never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy, and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story.